I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I will say this, that one of my projects for this weekend, you and I talked about it yesterday, Seth, will be watching Quarterback on Netflix. Last night would have been a good night to start it with no Astros game, but I did not. I say that because this actually gets me interested in watching it. Quarterback, the Netflix documentary that tracks the 2024 season for Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, and Kirk Cousins. A texter says that the quarterback documentary, the Jared Goff part, went over the Texans game when they played them in Week 10 and mentioned that Kalen Bullock had a tendency and they knew a big play would work on him.
Ooh!
And I think they did hit a big play on him in that game, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember.
Sorry, and which game was that?
The Lions game. They were following that documentary was following Jared Goff, and I guess they focused in at one point on the Texans game in the documentary. Yeah.
And that's where I think that, boy, the time of the season for that is really interesting, just because there were a lot of times this year where Kalen Bullock made some rookie mistakes, or even if they weren't mistakes, it was just doesn't have that level of anticipation yet that veteran safeties have when they can see the whole picture in front of them. And he got a lot better at it as the year went along. That's going to be one of the Texans defense. Really, one of their only fatal flaws last year were some of the big plays allowed in the passing game and in the run game. Big plays in general, yeah, but especially deep touchdowns. And that's what's going to happen when you've got a rookie free safety at times.
Yeah.
So he made a lot of improvement during the season. I'm guessing that he's going to build on that. You never know for sure, but that could be a that's a huge improvement when you take what that defense was able to do in terms of making big plays. If they can just get rid of some of the stuff on the 5% of the time, they would have these flubs in the back end that would undo a lot of the great work. And the Lions game is a great example of that. That, man, boy, they turned Jared Goff turned the ball over 5 times in that game.
They still lost.
They still won. And yeah, the offense didn't help the defense out in the second half, but some of those mental error type things, yeah, if the defense can just iron those things out, they could be an all-time defense.
Yeah.
It's that close, and it's just some of those big chunk plays in the Titans game, in some of those games, that's you swing that over to the other side, and it's incredible how good they could be.
It is a potential Super Bowl defense. There's no question about that. I agree with you. The Rangers are coming to town, so we'll get to the storylines here in just a second. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic had an article that had some tidbits from around the league, including a couple Cam Smith tidbits. If you're looking to feel good about the Kyle Tucker trade, there's been a lot of reason to of late. Isak Paredes making the All-Star team earlier this week, yeah, was validation of that element of the trade. Cam Smith, as we've said since the trade was consummated, Seth, and since you and I were there for his spring training debut where he hit 2 home runs in his debut,
yeah.
We've been saying that's – I mean, that – Isak Paredes could wash out, you know, like, and I'm saying, I don't think he will, but Isak Paredes could turn into a donkey, and if Cam Smith turns into an all-star, you win that Kyle Tucker trade going away. He's 22 years old with 6 years of team control coming up, and it would appear, according to these tidbits that you unearthed in this Ken Rosenthal article, that he's got good baseball character on top of it as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't, it was an article specifically about Cam Smith, okay, so it was easy to unearth the tidbits.
Yeah.
But the big one for me, that's really, regardless of anything that Cam Smith does at the plate, one of the reasons I was frustrated with Kyle Tucker over the last couple seasons was that he had regressed defensively. And a lot of times, it just looked like Kyle Tucker was a little bit lazy in right field. He had been incredible earlier in his career, and then these last few years, he hasn't been the same guy defensively. This is a guy, Cam Smith had a total of 3 starts in the outfield, and it was in summer league back in college or wherever it was, yeah, playing left field. So very, very little experience in the outfield. Among AL right fielders, Smith entered Tuesday tied with Aaron Judge for third in outs above average, within striking distance of the co-leaders.
I got to hear, Will Abreu on the Red Sox and Lawrence Butler of the A's. Yep.
Thank you. Yep. I had excised that for some reason. He's third in defensive runs saved behind Adolis Garcia and Abreu. His sprint speed among right fielders was second only to Corbin Carroll. Like, he's playing... He has come along at warp speed in terms of his development as a right fielder.
And I'm glad you got all this in here, because I will tell you how I was feeling about Cam Smith in right field early in the season. In the season with him at right field, I'm like, he's really good. But I don't want to be over the top in the praise, because I'm like, he's really good. I think he's really good, but I don't look at myself as some sort of defensive nerd baseball expert. I'm like, I think this kid, looking at his range, looking at the catches he's making, I think he's going to wind up having a pretty good arm as well when the whole thing's all said and done. I'm like, I think he's really good. Everybody else around here is going, yeah, he's doing good. I wanted to be so over the top about him early on, and I love that now we're at a part in the season. We're in July now. We're 3 months in. Like, he's good. Like, he is he is going to be an everyday, unless they need him at third base someday, he is going to be a really good everyday right fielder in Major League Baseball.
Well, and in terms of the way he's wired, remember back in the day when A.J. Hinch gave us that little tidbit about how he'd had to have some conversations with Kyle Tucker about playing with the same level of intensity and just being kind of in the Astros mold?
Yes.
That Kyle Tucker just didn't quite belong when it came to the sense of urgency of other guys on the team. That was something he had to learn and mature into. And may have regressed out of. But there's this story by Omar Lopez, the bench coach in there, who's talking about how he gets on the treadmill at 5:30 a.m. every day at spring training. And usually he's in there by himself. And then all of a sudden, like every day, there's this somebody walking in at 5:45 a.m. It's Cam Smith. And and he's continued that level of work ethic, shows up at the ballpark 7 hours before the game every day. And just it felt a little bit like an Ohtani story or something.
Yeah.
If I find out that Cam Smith has a studio apartment in that apartment building right next door to Daikin Park, I'll be over the moon. You remember all these stories about Shohei Ohtani? You're like, yeah, just lives a very simple existence.
Yeah.
Doesn't just stays in his apartment and works at baseball and all this. Yes.
So both feels like Cam Smith. That's what I was going to. Okay, it sounds like both things. And I was about to ask you, what would get you more excited about the studio apartment next to the stadium? That he's walking distance from work, or that he's being very frugal with his bonus money?
A combination of the
both,
two.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and that he doesn't have to worry about an interpreter somehow stealing a bunch of his money. He speaks English perfectly well for somebody who's from Florida. So he's...
Nice shot at Florida right there. That was good. That was strong.
You got to remember, he's from Florida.
Yeah.
He's not like a lot of these other guys where the assimilation into actual society is pretty easy.
Yeah.
You come from the Dominican Republic or Venezuela or something, like, okay, yeah, there's a challenge, but whatever. You come from Florida to anywhere else in the contiguous United States, and it's an adjustment.
Big adjustment, man. I don't care that it's West Palm Beach. Big adjustment.
Yeah. We don't have meth in vending machines around here the way they do in Florida.
That meth vending machine. That's right. That's right.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you know, we were doing report cards in the a segment ago with the Texans in the offseason. I mean, the Kyle Tucker trade's an A right now, right? For the Astros.
An A, but it is also, though, too. You're not going to find a lot of people saying that the Cubs or the Astros need to win this trade or they won this trade just because it is what it is. The Cubs are making a big move trying to win a World Series this year.
I think both teams would do it again. I think both
Well, Right now, that's what
right
we're
now,
saying.
Right now, yeah, yeah, right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, if the Cubs lose, if the Cubs, like, somehow fall off and lose in the wild card round or something, then it's going to be a D for the Cubs and
absolutely,
an A++ for the Astros.
Yeah, subject to change, for sure. But I think as
I don't
of right
know,
now.
And honestly, both teams would do it again, and yet still, there is a part of me of, like, I don't know how many teams would have sacrificed if Cam Smith, if the Cubs knew that Cam Smith was capable of this immediately, would they have traded away 6 years of control of a guy like that for anybody?
Well, knowing that he could play right field, you know, did they even know? Like, the Astros are, you know, the Astros are willing to think outside the box when it comes to this. You know, the Cubs, I'm guessing the Cubs drafted him to be their third baseman of the future. Did they draft him with any inkling that he could be their starting right fielder right now? He's not having as good a year as Kyle Tucker. Nobody's saying that, but. Yeah. But like, you're right. The sacrifice of sending away a 22-year-old player like that when he could have just, you slot him in. My guess is that if they didn't have Kyle Tucker and they had Cam Smith having the year he's having in right field, I'd have to go look at the standings, but the Cubs would still be a pretty damn good baseball team right now.
And all the reports out when people were talking about the Astros potential trades, et cetera, they were, the Cubs with Kyle Tucker. Yeah. I remember when the Cubs first entered the scene, and there was more about, because nobody was really talking about it in Houston. But I had seen somebody mention it that Cam, you know, that the Cubs were a possibility. But the big barrier was that they really, really liked Cam Smith and they didn't want to let go of Cam Smith. So nothing titillated me about it initially because I didn't think it was going to be a possibility because the Astros would have wanted Cam Smith and the Cubs wouldn't give him up. And then lo and behold, they did. So it's not like they weren't, you know, excited about Cam Smith up there.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, right. No, I mean, first round pick, you always get excited about guys like that. Cam Smith, 2.3 wins above replacement on Baseball Reference. Kyle Tucker, 4.0 wins above replacement.
Okay, so Kyle Tucker on the season, last time I checked, he was in the low 900s in the OPS, yeah. And he's been playing pretty much that way the whole year.
Very consistent.
I mean, he started off on an incredible tear.
Yeah.
But, like he's been pretty consistent. It's not like he's had a couple great months and one bad month. Over the last 28 days, Cam Smith's got a 944 OPS.
Yeah, he's been great.
So small sample size and whatnot, but the progression has been pretty damn steady. He's had some droughts along the way, but in the last 28 days, for what it's worth, he's been playing at Kyle Tucker level offensively, and he's been a much better right fielder. He's been a much better defender than Kyle Tucker. So if he extends this on through the end of the season, it's a slam dunk. I don't care what the Cubs say about what they were trying to do. If he plays at the caliber of Kyle Tucker, who, by the way, isn't all that great in the playoffs,
yep,
then you really screwed up in trading away Cam Smith.
Yes, yes. And the development for me, like, he looked, there were times early in the season where it's like, oh man, that video that they did in the clubhouse where they made a big deal out of him making the ball club. The 2 weeks into the season, I'm like, man, they're going to look like idiots doing this because they're going to have to send this kid down to Sugarland because he looks overwhelmed. I mean, he was striking out all the time early in the season. And he still strikes out a fair amount, but not nearly to the extent he was earlier in the season. And when he's not striking out now, he's making hard contact. He's hitting with power. He's going to be a 30 home run guy. Just look at him. Look at his frame. He's going to get bigger. He has developed, Seth, at a pace of somebody who goes into the gym every day at 5:45 in the morning. You know what I mean?
Like, right. A level of consistency.
He's developed very quickly. If you were to ask me what the work habits are for a guy who has developed as rapidly as he has, I would say he's in the batting cage every day trying to work on his eye. He's in the gym. This kid has a routine. He's got a routine, and it starts early and it ends late, and that's what this Rosenthal article says.
I think if there's one thing that they've done a really good job of with younger athletes these days, it's almost like they teach them the value of compound interest. That it's that don't worry about trying to make these vast improvements in big chunks or whatever. Every workout doesn't have to look like a Nike commercial, et cetera. It's how quickly can you get them on a consistent schedule to where they understand when they're looking, and this is what D'Amico talks about. You just look at the veterans around you, the guys that have a consistent schedule and a routine, and you just make that 0.1% improvement every day. And it's hard. You guys, anybody out there that, you know, has kids, you know, it's hard for young men to necessarily latch on to
yes,
the value of just everyday work. And he seemingly, from all reports, has that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's he. I mean, as of right now, Kyle Tucker's got a 899 OPS on the season. Cam Smith is over the last month has had a 944 OPS.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a half a season to play. There's going to be hiccups along the way, but it looks really, really good.
If these two teams got together, you know, today, the two GMs get together, and the purpose of the conversation is, hey, let's just flip back and we'll give you back Tucker and you give us back our guys. If that were the topic, I don't think either team would do it. Like, we have a texter, we have a few texters saying Cubs wouldn't make this trade again. I think if you were to ask them, like, today, right now, you could do, you know, you could do, like, you know, they say 1, 2, 3, no give backs. If you could do a give back here, and the Cubs would say, all right, give us Cam Smith and Isak Paredes, and I guess Wisniewski with his Tommy John, and we'll give you back Kyle Tucker. I think if one of the two teams were to flinch and say, okay, we'll reverse the trade, it would be the Cubs. I think they would say, yeah, give us back Paredes and Cam Smith. Here you can have Tucker, and you guys deal with the contract issue at the end of the year, not us dealing with the contract issue at the end of the year. That said, I don't think either team would flinch. I think if a team were to flinch, it would be the Cubs. They would say, yeah, let's reverse the trade. But I don't think either team would. The Cubs are two games up in the NL Central right now. Like, I don't, like, it may work out to where Kyle Tucker's not there long term. And to your point, Seth, if they don't win a World Series or whatever the bar is they feel like they need to clear in the postseason for them to justify 1 year of Kyle Tucker for all this, if they don't attain that, then that's a different conversation for a different time. I think on July 11th, both teams would say, we're going to stick with what we did in this trade. We're going to stand.
Yeah, right now, yes.
Right now, today.
Yeah. So somewhat, I didn't want to cherry pick completely, but I'll cherry pick a little bit. But I'll go back to May 1st. Since May 1st, game 24 for Cam Smith.
Yeah.
So he's had some time to get acclimated to the major leagues.
Yep.
Since he's hitting .313 with an .816 OPS.
Yeah, he's a solid, more than solid
I mean,
right
it's,
fielder.
And been playing really, really well in the outfield.
Yeah.
I didn't really have it in me to hope for this performance out of him so far. And we're halfway into the season. I've got my fingers crossed and I'm knocking on wood and all that, but man.
When he was struggling early in the year, I think I said at one point I'd sign up for a 700 plus OPS in his rookie year.
Right.
I mean, we knew he was going to get at bats. They're going to play him. They're not going to send him to Sugarland. They're going to play him. They're going to take their lumps. They're going to try to win a division while developing a right fielder, kind of the opposite of what the Rockets are saying they're doing right now. The Rockets are like, we ain't developing young guys anymore. We're going for it. The Astros, if you were to, you know, give them truth serum, would say, yeah, we're trying to, with Cam Smith specifically, we're trying to win. We're trying to win a World Series. We are. But at the same time, we've got this right fielder that is a phenom that we're trying to develop, and we'll take some lumps here. They're not having to really take lumps with him anymore. He's especially as the lineup is constructed right now with no Yordan Alvarez, no Jeremy Pena, now no Jake Myers, probably missing one or two more. Well, Christian Walker's back from maternity leave. Cam Smith is one of their two or three with this lineup. I mean, this everyday lineup that they've got trotting out there right now. Well, Cam Smith's one of their. I mean, you don't get past three guys before you say who are your best players, not pitchers, everyday players on this team. It's Altuve, it's Cam Smith. If Yiner could ever develop any consistency here, Christian Walker, I'll throw in there as well, develop any consistency. I mean, and Isak Paredes, obviously. I would say it's Paredes, Altuve, and Cam Smith as the lineup is right now. Those are your three best players right now. He's one of your three best guys in a divisional race in July right now because of, one, he's been very, very good, and two, the injury gods have just zapped you all season long.
It's so weird. It almost feels like a 2015 type of vibe with the Astros right now, except that, you know, without all of the depression that came before 2015.
Yeah.
And when you had, when Carlos Correa and George Springer and everybody else were starting to come along, the pipeline was just jam-packed at that point. That's the big difference between now and 2015 was that you don't have that same pipeline.
No.
But you also have some veterans on the team that you didn't have in 2015, obviously.
Yep.
And all I ask you to do is to stop getting swept by teams like the Guardians.
Yeah.
That's all I ask.
Starts tonight. These guys are 9.5 games behind you. Bury them.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
To me, like the three biggest storylines for the series this weekend, Seth, to shift gears a little bit, talking about this Rangers series. One is Bryce Matthews' debut. I'm very anxious to see where he's playing, where he is in the lineup, just exactly how Dana Brown and Joe Espada view him, or view what, how much you can put on his plate, right? To, you know, I would anticipate he's going to be at the back end of the lineup because I don't think they're going to want to overwhelm him in his major league debut and put him near the top of the lineup. If they were to do that, I think it would, A, say a lot about what they think about him, and B, I think it would just be a cool go-for-it kind of move. Like, hey, man, we had no intentions of bringing this guy up this year. We wanted him to develop one more year. But as long as he's here, let's see what he can handle. So I'm excited for Bryce Matthews' debut tonight. Make get on base, man. Wreak a little havoc on the base paths. He's got 25 stolen bases this
year. All the potential is there. Yes. Everything looks great. It's just the strikeouts, the difference, the home and away splits that he has right now, where you see the promise, but he's much, much, much better on the road in the Pacific Coast League, where there's a lot of hitter-friendly parks. He's stolen 25 bases so far in just 73 games. He's got speed. He walks a lot. He strikes out a lot, but he also walks a lot. So if, you know, there's the potential is obvious.
Yes.
There's nothing. Nobody has looked at Bryce Matthews and thought like, oh, I don't know if that was a good pick or not. It's just a matter of he's not as far along as a guy like Cam Smith was when he came in. But it's all right there. And there's some guys are just they take that jump above and beyond what they did in the minors when they get in the bright lights. And then the other part of it too is, you know, when you get into the one of the differences between the minors and the majors is that you have such a more cemented game plan going into games. The scouting report, the pitchers you're gonna see, all of that you can do. They've got a lot of resources in the minors, but you've got more of a solid plan, and you've got more predictable expectations about who you're gonna see and how the team's gonna play, that he might really thrive in that environment.
Well, and I would guess for him specifically too, there's a plan. You know, some of these guys are calling up. It's like, you know, they're going to, you know, they're calling up Kennedy Corona. They don't have some sort of 4-week layout for what it's going to look like for him. With Bryce Matthews, I don't think they're just shooting from the hip with him. I think they, especially knowing what the injuries are right now, they've got a pretty good idea as to how they're going to deploy him during his time with the big club.
Well, it's just the one thing just to make a loose analogy. In football, I was always impressed with or intrigued by the guys that there's guys, especially with rookies, that don't necessarily look all that great in the preseason. And in the preseason in football, you're not doing a whole lot of game planning. You're not doing a whole lot of film study ahead of time, all of those other things. But the guys that are kind of advanced for their age and maturity, when they get into the regular season and all of a sudden you're specifically preparing for one opponent for a whole week and you've got more of a plan and all of that, they really take off.
Oh, they thrive.
The structure is good for them. And then some of the guys who shined in the preseason, when they don't have to use their brains at all, they falter in the regular season.
Yeah.
So there is an element to, even though the difficulty level is higher, there's some guys that just get to that more professional environment and they thrive in it. So you just, that's a huge wild card, and you might see that out of Bryce Matthews.
Yeah, man, that's really good. That is good stuff. Number two. So number one storyline this weekend, Bryce Matthews. Number two, this is about as good a card of pitching matchups in terms of quality and intrigue that we've had all season long that I can remember. First, rare is the series where we get both Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown pitching back-to-back with each other. You know, the way the schedule's laid out, those two have always seemed to fall in different series than the other guy. But they got the All-Star break coming up here. Hunter's not going to pitch in the All-Star game. He's already been replaced on the All-Star roster. I don't know if he's traveling to Atlanta or not. I know Jeremy Pena is. He's not going to play, but he's going to go to the game. I would think just being introduced to the crowd as an All-Star is for the first time is a really cool thing. But these pitching matchups, I mean, even statistically, it's not a great matchup, Seth, tonight. you know, you got the two pitchers have a 5.82 ERA and a 4.32 ERA. But it's Lance McCullers versus Jack Leiter. That's a that's a fun undercard, I'll call it, on Friday, you know?
Yeah, and Lance McCullers right now is just such a huge wild card as to which version of him you're going to see.
Yeah.
Is he? He's still on this journey of discovery. He's on a quest to find out and discover who exactly he is right now as a pitcher with and what his pitch selection needs to be. I'm excited, but also very, very nervous about it.
And I think Lance is going to be jacked up for this. It's the Rangers, you know. I think the energy is going to be high. We'll see. I mean, Lance has been inconsistent, so hopefully it looks a lot more like that stretch where he was striking out 9 and 12 guys in back to back games earlier this year.
It's always for me. It's always hard when people get so frustrated with Lance and make it personal, almost like somehow Lance is responsible for his own injuries or something, because Lance might be, in terms of Houston athletes, the guy who most embodies everything that you as a fan would really like your players to be like emotionally. Like Lance got an H-Town tattoo when he was a young man. Like he is all about the team. He's got that fire in him. He genuinely hates his opponent, it feels like, at times. Like, all those things are exactly like how we wish our athletes would be. He's just got this one minor detail of getting injured all the time for long stretches of time.
He misses full seasons. Yeah.
But I do. Everybody, you know, the difference between professional athletes and the fans a lot of times is the grudge that they have against divisional opponents or whomever else. Like, you know, the athletes come from all over the damn hemisphere and the other hemisphere, and they're temporary residents in their city, and they don't have that same level of animosity towards the opponent necessarily.
Yeah.
Lance has that animosity in him.
Yeah,
it's in him.
He does.
He every team you hate, Lance hates
too.
Yes,
love Lance McCullers.
He takes it personal, and I love that.
I do too. The other two matchups are, as they would say back in the day, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, this is a main event anywhere in the country, Mean Gene. Framber Valdez and Jacob deGrom, a should-be all-star versus an actual all-star, and then Hunter Brown versus Nathan Eovaldi on Sunday. I mean, these are two heavyweight pitching matchups. Framber versus deGrom on Saturday and Hunter versus Eovaldi on Sunday. These are excellent, excellent pitching matchups. And I would, as a sub-storyline to this one, Seth, of all these guys, I would say the one that I have my eyes on the most is Hunter Brown. Was not great in his win in Colorado. I think he won his game in Colorado. Some of it was attributed to the altitude. The break on his curveball wasn't great. But he had one of his worst outings of the last 14 months earlier this week against the Guardians. Gave up 6 earned runs and was giving up a lot of hard contact. I mean, home runs, line drives. I would feel much better going into the All-Star break if Hunter Brown gave us one of his classic 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, that kind of thing.
And then the big question is, Hunter Brown alluded to it in the post game that he, you know, there's a chance that they had some tips on him, or that he had some tips, and that he was going to get in and try to figure it out and see if they could iron that out. I think that the Guardians especially, man, it seemed like the Guardians staff worked their butts off to try to figure some things out about the Astros pitchers.
Yes.
I mean, there were just times where it just felt like they knew it was coming, and they probably just, you're on a 10-game losing streak. You send your nerds to the lab with 18 cans of Red Bull and figure it out.
Because they did.
And in that first game, I mean, they were bunting early in the game. They were doing everything they could to just try to get off the schneid.
Yep.
So if they had figured out a tip for Hunter Brown, then ultimately, maybe that ends up being a good thing.
Yep. And number three storyline, this is a simple one. You get a chance to bury the Rangers. You're 9.5 games up on them. You can walk out Sunday. You can go into the All-Star break with the hated Rangers 12.5 games back. Make it happen, man. Just make it happen. I was really looking forward, Seth, after the Jake Meyers re-injury on Wednesday. I was really looking forward to Chandler Rome writing about this, because Chandler has appropriately had such scorn for the Astros' return to play policies, just little jabs at them throughout the last couple
years. And then also
the
Astros, the way they communicate things has really agitated him. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, I get it, especially for Chandler. You know, Chandler works his butt off. You can tell. Like, he really puts his time into it. And he's probably got – I don't think he likes probably – fielding hundreds of questions from readers that he simply can't give an answer to because the Astros are so opaque about the way they release information about injuries.
Well, and Chandler's quick to point out, too, that Joe Espada and Dana Brown are being put in a similar situation to Chandler. You know, Chandler's asking these guys, and these guys either know or are not allowed to say certain things. Like, Joe Espada and Dana Brown are put out over their skis a lot with a lot of these medical questions. And and Chandler also points out, comes with the territory. This is why you get paid a lot of money as a GM and a manager, is you do get asked about injured guys. It's up to you to give the answers that are going to convey it the way the team wants to, or the way you want to, or provide clarity, whatever the goal is. I thought this line tickled me. This was in response to Joe Espada. Let's play the clip here. Joe Espada being asked if any imaging had been done. This is after the game on Wednesday. Again, Jake Meyers leaves the game before the game even starts, re-injuring his calf. Joe Espada asked, did you guys do any imaging before sending him back out there?
No. We didn't think that he needed it. We just did some ultrasound, which it shows how the muscle and stuff is in there. And, you know, it's just some tightness in there. And, you know, trying to get him healthy, trying to get him back on the field.
I thought the same thing Chandler did when he said, yeah, it just shows, you know, the muscle and stuff. Anytime the two words and stuff show up in a medical diagnosis.
Imagine if a doctor.
And stuff. If you have a doctor that ever says the words and stuff to you, get the hell out of there. Chandler.
Your doctor. I looked at it. It looked so squishy in there. And I was like, what's all this stuff?
And stuff. It looks squishy and stuff. Chandler, this line just tickled me in Chandler's article. Did some ultrasounds, which shows how the muscle and stuff is in there, said Espada, who received a Doctor of Humane Letters from his alma mater, the University of Mobile, last May, but otherwise has little known medical background.
How's the muscle and stuff?
I was laughing. I was by myself in my living room laughing at that line. That was hysterical. That was funny as hell.
What is the most humane letter?
I don't even know what that is. What is
it? That sounds like an honorary doctorate that you get from a. So he's probably. That's where he got his undergrad degree, so he's probably honored with a.
You know, S.
That's just gentle and humane.
S is a soft letter. It's S.
I don't know. S doesn't sound humane at all.
Sounds like a hissing.
That sounds like an air coming out of a. Yeah, I don't know. G, just a soft G. The hard G, no. That goes with gash and gore and all that.
Blunt force trauma.
Gentle.
Yeah.
You know, generous.
Otherwise, he has little known medical background. I was like picturing a Espada with like some sort of like doc in a box off to the side as a side hustle that he's got in the off season. What do you do in the off season, Joe? I know managers don't make as much as they used to. Oh, I handle a kiosk at an HEB where people come in for shots and things like that.
Dr. Espada. What did the biopsy show? You got some lumps and stuff in there, and you know, I don't know. It's just kind of it's there. It's
how's the muscle and stuff?
Doc, what is this? What is this medication that you're going to give me? Do I mean, it's going to calm your heart rate down and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
It's going to make things better.
Yeah. Yeah. Chandler disgustedly listing the teams that actually make trainers available is also my favorite thing. I think he's done this multiple times. He's like, the Astros don't make their medical staff available, and they cite the collective bargaining agreement in doing so. Yet somehow teams like Minnesota, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and the Athletics and more find a loophole to get their trainers out there to talk about the
They cite the CBA or the other one, the medical privacy one that people always misuse. What's that one?
HIPAA.
Yeah. HIPAA, yeah, HIPAA, they always mention it. HIPAA does not apply to most sports situations.
No.
So whenever somebody brings up HIPAA as a reason for their non-disclosure, it's usually BS. So that's the part. I'm kind of torn on that. I don't feel like I need to. I don't need a team to make its trainers and doctors available on a regular schedule or anything, but perhaps something a statement every now and then explaining this situation, and then also. Where I get frustrated, including with the Texans with this, don't give me optimism when you shouldn't have optimism.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the part where it feels like you have the rug pulled out from you.
Yep.
Don't tell me a guy is feeling great and then 3 days later he's having Tommy John surgery.
I am with you on the regular availability of trainers. I do feel like they're at a crisis point right now where they might need to do, like, the fans are. This Jake Myers thing pushed it over the top. The guy gets re-injured coming back too quick, running out to take his position in center field. And I'm not even saying that's necessarily – I'm not saying any of these individually are necessarily the medical staff's fault. I've just never seen anything like this before. And the natives right. are getting restless, and people spend a lot of money to watch this baseball team.
Dr. Espada, have you ever seen anything like this before? No, I haven't. Really? And he's like, well, yeah, but I mean, I've never actually looked at one before. So, yeah, so I've never seen anything like
nothing
it.
Like yeah. it. Yeah, nothing like it. Yeah, nothing like it. Well, here's the other thing, too, Seth, that's super confusing to me, is that, like, the answer to that question, did you do any imaging on Jake Myers' calf? No, we did an ultrasound, and that shows the muscle and stuff. They didn't do any imaging on Pena's rib until they found out it was broken. You know, like Yordan's arm, they send him into a hand specialist after the second setback with all this stuff. Like you're a billion-dollar operation. Why are you not just doing MRIs on any of this stuff that pops up? They're acting like someone who has no medical coverage and they don't want to pay full boat on an MRI or something. Like,
right? Yeah. Look, send them to South America. You can do some medical tourism or something.
Yes.
Okay. If you're worried about the money, just go ahead and set up something overseas.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry that you guys are strapped for cash right now,
right.
But this is kind of a big deal.
Yes.
It's an MRI.
It is.
Just
do it, and you'll find out. And this will prevent a lot of the mystery that pops up with this.
I'll tell you what, the worst, I can't tell you right now. Later in the show, I'll tell you the worst medical experience I had in the NFL.
Okay,
the
that's
one
a tease.
That freaked
Can you
me
do-
out the most, okay. Where I was like, this is not being handled properly.
Okay, keep that. Top of, I'm writing it down right now. That
yeah, you're gonna have to remind me.
Yeah,
of it.
No, we'll
I'm
hit
gonna
it.
Forget this 37 seconds.
We'll hit it in the next segment for sure. Seth medical story. I'm writing it down right now. We'll do that in the next segment. Also, could Nico Collins lead the league in receiving yards this year? And if he does, what's the payout? This is where Nico Collins is being viewed right now by odds makers out there, and it is wow. We will tell you coming up next. Also, in light of the floods that have affected so many lives in the Hill Country, man, our hearts just go out to everybody from Kerr County and that part of the country and people who are vacationing up there and all that. We're doing what we can to support with so many wonderful organizations setting up donation drives. The best way that we can help is to get you in touch with those people, provide you the information where those outlets are providing those avenues for you to help our Texas neighbors. And it's really easy. Just text FLOOD, FLOOD, to 20357, and it's going to immediately send you a website with a list of all the ways that you can help in the flood relief efforts for Kerr County. It can be a little overwhelming, like, how do I help? I want to find a place. I've got money. I've got time. Whatever it is, I want to go help. We've compiled that for you. So just text FLOOD to 20357, and you will be good to go on that. Nico Collins talk and Seth medical story. That's coming up next.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD. One on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.